Please end all sillies. Recording has begun.
Guys, we're recording late.
Oh, shit. We're going to get in trouble.
It's having that week of being ill. It's really thrown us off.
Yes. But I think we sound better.
Yes, I think we sound pretty much normal now, mm-hmm. which is good. Because we were ill for ages.
Yeah, we were really ill. Hold on.
It was 7 to 10 days
yeah.
of being properly unwell.
It was not a good time.
Mm-hmm. So we're still catching up.
Yeah. But the episode's going to go out on time, probably. Yep. Hopefully.
Yep.
If it's not, blame Ailey.
Excuse me.
I said first, so.
So rude. So ungrateful. So how are you?
I'm grand. I'm good. I'm enjoying the nice weather we've been having. It's actually been sunny and things recently.
We can actually go outside.
I know. We've been able to go outside after we had those three storms in a row through February. It's now early March and spring is almost here. And I've had three cups of coffee today and I'm feeling pretty good.
Which he told me was by accident. I'm not really sure how you can have three cups of coffee by accident, but there you go.
It's because I was going to make myself an AeroPress, which is quite small. It's like 180 mils of coffee. And then I ground the wrong amount of beans. So well, I might as well just make a half litre instead.
Because that's the obvious answer.
That's why I drank that myself. And then we shared that again.
So I've had one cup of coffee.
I've had three. Come with me.
And I think it shows.
What do you mean?
Well, they can't see you, but you're twitching.
I'm just saying, I've never been blinking more. And that's a good sign. It's a sign of health. My nose has never been wetter, you know?
You're not a dog.
How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very tired. It's been a lot.
Yeah.
We hope, if you're on Patreon, that you enjoyed this week's mini episode.
Yes.
It was all about the Battle of Roslyn, which we talked about in our Legends of Roslyn episode.
Yep. It was really good. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
So if you want to know more about the battle that I briefly mentioned in the main episode, get yourself over to Patreon.
It's a good time.
Because the story's there. Mm-hmm. It's waiting for you. It's in a pretty little bowl. It's wrapped up really nice. Just sitting there, waiting for you to open it.
Yeah.
It's got your name on it.
And then if you're...
How did we do that? I don't know.
I don't know. But we did
it. But it's there.
You know, if you're a binger and you like to binge content, you could just join for a month, listen to everything, and then cancel it.
Yeah, there's at least 20 posts, if not more, there now.
Yeah.
And depending on what tier you go for, what suits you, you can get early access to episodes. You can get access to the mini episodes. There are three now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And our Blether series, which has been really fun.
It has been really fun.
Where we just chat once a week.
Yep.
Just about whatever occurs to us, and it's been really nice.
Yeah, it's been really good.
And we have the book club.
Yes. I think there's got to be at least 5 hours of content so far.
I'd say so, yeah.
And that's only the beginning.
Well, one of the mini episodes was about an hour, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think so.
So it's not really a mini episode.
No, it was just an episode.
Yeah.
May well have been as long as this episode is going to be.
So there's loads of stuff over
there.
What's
going on?
And there's a discount code for merch.
Oh, there is.
If you join.
Yeah.
We also have merch.
We have merch. And you get to support your two favourite podcast creatives.
Your two favourite goobers.
That's us.
And their beautiful boy.
Yeah. The dog. Who's been put to his bed because he's a bit hyper.
Mm-hmm. We had to buy him a toothbrush.
We did.
Because the vet told us he's not chewing his food enough. He's just inhaling it. So he's not cleaning his teeth as much as he would like.
Yeah.
So we have to start brushing his teeth. And he hates it.
Yeah, he was not a fan when I tried the other night.
No.
He'll get used to it.
He will. He'll be fine. But it's just quite funny that we bought him a toothbrush and some toothpaste.
Bought him his little toothbrush. Got to brush his teethies. He's a good boy.
He is a good boy.
He's a good boy.
So yeah, join Patreon so that you can keep this boy in his biscuits.
Yep. He needs them. He's got a lot of energy. This is Kieran in the edit. Just before we get into it, I wanted to let people know that in the latter half of the episode, there's a trigger warning for self-harm and suicidal thoughts. Just so if anyone wants to skip this episode, they can. But we mention it again before we start. Enjoy the episode. So what do we have today?
This week, it's a bit of a different episode for us. Mm-hmm. It's more in the true crime realm.
Oh, I'm scared.
Than the spooky realm. But it's still historical. It's a historical case.
That's good.
We've talked about it before, that I'm really interested in true crime. Mm-hmm. I follow true crime quite closely. And I'm just not keen on doing it here unless I can do it properly. So we're kind of staying away from true crime.
Yeah.
But this is a historical case.
Well, that's exciting.
So it's different in my head.
And I, once again, know nothing about the episode.
Yes.
As usual.
Because you knew about Stirling.
I didn't know about that.
Because we went to Stirling.
We did do that. I've just realised we didn't do the professional podcasters thing.
What?
We didn't say this is a generally spooky podcast.
Oh, no.
We're 7 minutes in. The people aren't going to know.
Oh, no. We failed. Oh. Right, stop recording.
Yep, we're going to have to...
Get rid of the mics.
Cut it.
Shut it down. Shut her down.
We're not doing it properly.
This is the generally spooky podcast.
Is it?
But if you've made it this far, you probably know that.
Hopefully you figure that out.
And I'm Ailey.
And I'm Kieran. And Ailey tells the story, and I don't know it, normally.
The dog wriggles in his bed.
Yeah, in the background, generally being loud and annoying. And that's what's going on here.
Can't believe we forgot.
I know.
That's not good.
I'm too hyped up on coffee.
But I feel like the more that we've done this, the more comfortable we've gotten.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of forget that, like, this might be some people listening for the first time.
Yeah.
Because I imagine the people who have been listening from the start,
mm-hmm,
listening to this episode and like, oh, we're friends. Like,
so we're all hanging out here.
You know who we are.
And if you want to join, you have to put the time in, listen to it all, figure out what's going on.
I mean, you don't have to. It's okay.
If you want to just listen to this one, you can.
Yeah, it's fine. Like, I'm not going to check.
We won't know.
No.
Well, what is this one?
This week, we are talking about Archibald Kinloch.
Okay.
And I've been sitting on this episode idea for about a year. Because I found out about it about a year ago. And I thought it was really, really interesting. And I really want to do a podcast episode on it. But now is the right time. We're doing it. We're talking about it.
We're here. It's happening.
Have you heard of Archibald Kinloch?
I have not. I don't know anything about it.
Okay.
I think I might have heard of it as a place, Kinloch, but it just sounds like a general Scottish place.
Kinloch Rannoch is a village. That's what I was thinking of.
Oh, Kinloch Burvey.
And Kinloch U.
Ah, so it's a partial name of everywhere in Scotland.
Yeah, it's a pretty typical Scottish name.
Yeah.
So, Archibald.
It's Kieran, actually.
Archibald. He was born around 1749.
Okay.
Which was just after the final Jacobite rising in Scotland. That ended in 1746. That's when the Battle of Culloden was.
Yep, and thankfully, it's not when James VI was king.
No.
Just after.
It's not entirely clear exactly when he was born.
Mm.
The guess is about 1749. And it's kind of guesstimated because his older brother was born in 1747.
Okay.
So people assume he was about 1749.
Seems fair.
Knowing the brothers.
How do they know when his brother was born?
There's more records kept about when he was born. From what I can tell, he was the eldest of the family.
Okay.
He was the eldest sibling.
Mm-hmm.
But other records have said there was an older brother who died young.
Mm.
But we'll get into that.
Yeah.
And Archibald was part of the Kinloch family, who were very wealthy, very well-to-do.
That's what we like to hear.
Do we? Rag on them.
Yeah. Just jealousy, though.
I want a big house.
I want a big house and lots of money.
Well, they lived at Gilmerton House.
Okay.
Which is just a bit south of North Berwick, which we've talked about before.
Oh, okay, so they're very further Sutherland.
Yeah, not in Sutherland.
Very south.
Oh, right. Sutherland's up here, no. They're to the east of Edinburgh.
Okay.
So near the coast.
Mm-hmm.
North Berwick is on the coast.
Yep.
So that's where we are.
Got you.
But yeah, not Sutherland. Sutherland is a part of the Highlands.
I always forget that. I just meant the southern land. The south towards the border.
Nope.
I can see why I confuse everybody.
Now, the Kinlochs had owned Gilmerton since 1655.
Good work.
And from what I understand, I think they still own it, which is bananas.
That is bananas.
You can rent it out for weddings and things now. It's a wedding venue.
Classic.
They were a very influential family. They were, or the men of the family, were the baronets of Gilmerton.
Ooh.
So they had titles, and they had money, and they had influence, they had power. We've been here before.
Yep, this sounds familiar.
You
yep.
know something yep. bad is going to happen
yeah.
before too long.
As long as he doesn't become a monster in the castle, then we're fine.
Ah, but yeah, that's too similar.
Yeah.
Too similar.
That was Glam's castle reference for anyone who doesn't know.
Nice callback.
Thank you, thank you.
Archibald's father was called Sir David Kinloch.
Hmm.
Very grand.
Mm-hmm.
Who I couldn't find an awful lot of information about. There was a lot of information lacking about the other members of the family in this story.
Hmm.
But I found what I could. He was the fifth baronet of Gilmerton.
Okay, okay.
So the family had, like I said, they were well established. They'd been there for a while.
Yeah.
And he was the one who had the house built that's there now.
Okay.
From what I understand. It was built in 1750,
mm-hmm.
so not too long after Archibald was born, they had the house built. And it was supposedly built, or supposedly designed even, by the famous Scottish architect John Adam.
Okay.
We talked about him either in our House of Dun episode or our Killeen Castle episode. Mm. I can't remember which one. But he got around, he designed lots of the big buildings in Scotland.
Yep.
He's a famous name. He was a much lusted after architect for the wealthy.
Just imagine being able to say that about yourself. It would be very strange.
I'm much lusted after
for my architectural ingenuity.
Prowess.
Yeah.
look at those columns.
Yeah, no one does a straighter line than me.
Mm. Ooh, baby, you want a turret?
Give me a soil sample of that foundation.
God. What are we even doing?
Being sexy architects, obviously.
If this is your first episode, I'm so sorry. Let me issue you with a personal apology.
Mm.
I'm not going to say we're not like this all the time, but I'm sorry about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Back to Archibald, anyway. Mm. The centre of our tale.
The atrium, if you will.
The atrium. No more architecture references. We're done. That's the only time he gets referenced in this whole story. It's not important. Archibald was David Kinloch's middle child. We know he had an older brother called Francis. He may have had an older brother again.
Mm.
I'm not sure. He had a younger brother called Alexander. And I also read he had a sister called Harriet, who I think was younger than him. But in different things I read, the different accounts were giving different information about which siblings he actually had.
Mm.
It was very confusing. Like some were saying that it was just the two brothers. Some were saying it was only the three brothers. And then his sister was mentioned. I got very confused.
That's a shame.
Mm-hmm.
I just read Alias Grace by Margaret Atwood.
One of my favourite books in the entire world.
Which is why I read it. It was a recommendation. And it was really good. You should definitely read it. But it's about a murder trial and a murderess. Ooh, I've forgotten when. From the 1700s, 1800s in Canada. But it talked a lot about how all the different newspapers basically just printed whatever they wanted. Like, you didn't need to fact check. You could just say things about age and spelling and origin. So I'm not surprised there's all these differing accounts.
No, it's confusing when you're trying to find out what's actually accurate.
Yeah.
From what I read, I do believe he had a sister.
Hmm.
She gets mentioned later in court documents.
Mm-hmm. Foreshadowing.
So I would believe that that's genuine.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really confusing. Mm. And you think something so basic as like the genealogy of the family would be better documented, but it's not.
You think so.
Or at least not to my skill level.
Yeah.
Once again, I'm not a professional historian. I wish I was. It'd make this a lot easier, but I'm not.
Or maybe if you were, you'd be busy doing professional historian things. You wouldn't have time to do the podcast.
Maybe. Maybe.
Whatever. Lecturing, I guess.
Doing hot girl historianship.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to the family setup.
Mm.
Archibald was the middle child. And it's kind of mean, but it was kind of typical in fancy families back in the day to treat younger children, especially second children, kind of like the spare. Have you heard the term the heir and the spare before?
No.
Well, it's a thing. Like, if you have a title or you have things to pass down, you have to make sure you have an heir, mm-hmm. so someone who can take all that on, and a spare.
Oh, I did not know that.
Mm-hmm. It's not like an official thing, but it's common.
And
want to have more than one child, so should the worst happen, which I think may have happened here. I think the eldest child had died.
Well, that's just it. Like, they're not wrong.
But the term is the heir and the spare.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've not heard that before. That's really weird. Very pragmatic.
But it's just kind of cruel.
Mm.
It's a very quick way to build resentment between your children.
Well, yeah, if you're both being groomed for the same position and responsibility.
But see, you're not.
Well, you both, if you've got a spare, you're kind of grooming them.
Well, no, because usually in this setup, they were treated differently. Typically, the spare
mm-hmm.
went into the military.
Oh.
That was very common. I think in this case, Francis, who was the eldest son, he was also in the military. He had a military career. But it was typical for the younger brother to serve in the military. Mm. That's what they did. Because they weren't supposed to inherit, so they had to make something of themselves
mm.
in another way.
That makes sense. Weird, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's very weird.
I can't imagine that. I can't imagine being so cruel.
No. Just
even without meaning to be, but you're setting them up to be different from each other.
Yeah. It's really weird. It's kind of in line with the gentry just sending their kids off to boarding school mm-hmm. and they just get raised by the nanny. So you have kids, but and presumably you care about them and there's that maternal paternal instinct. But you're not spending any time to bond with them. It's very strange.
So in line with this, Archibald went into the military.
Mm.
He was the spare or a spare. He wasn't going to inherit, so he has to make something for himself or bring on honour to the family in a different way.
Yeah.
By serving in the army.
Mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
In 1767, so he was about 20-ish,
mm-hmm.
he was stationed in Ireland. And this is where he met a man called Major John Mackay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, John was a lot older than Archibald and they were really close. They're really close friends and he seems to have been a kind of mentor to him. He'll pop up in our story a little bit later on. John, that's when he met him. And then in 1773, Archibald was stationed in Canada.
Hmm.
So he travelled around a fair bit.
Yeah, very cool.
Because remember, this is the time of empire and mm-hmm. things were very different to the way they are now. So this was quite common.
Yep, that sounds good.
He was also promoted to captain while he was in Canada.
Ooh.
Which is a big deal.
Captain Archie.
It's a higher. Don't think he would have gone by Archie. Well, he was promoted to captain in Canada, and he also made another friend, a man called Lieutenant Colonel Samuel Twentyman.
That's a title.
And that it's spelt Twentyman.
Hmm.
Twentyman.
Well, that's an unusual name.
Yeah. So he made another close friend, and again, we'll hear from him a little bit later.
Well, that's nice that he knows how to make friends. That's good.
Yep.
Making friends in the workplace.
From all accounts, at this point, he was well-liked. He made friends easily. He was known for being very kind and people liked being around him.
And presumably it's all going to go to shit.
What makes you say that? What on earth gave you that idea?
Well,
I'm just telling you the pleasant story of a man who went off to war.
That is often pleasant.
Later in 1779, Archibald was promoted to major, which I'm led to believe is a big deal, but I'm quite ignorant of rank and military hierarchy.
Yeah.
But from what I understand, being a major is a big deal.
It's pretty major.
Kieran is not a major. Neither is he in the army.
That's not true. I've often been called a major waste of space.
Well, if you are involved in the military in any way and you can enlighten me on military hierarchy, you know, leave a comment, let me know. I'm always interested to hear.
Yep.
But when he was promoted to major, he was sent to the West Indies.
Mm-hmm.
Which, again, was quite common at that time. Part of the British Empire. A terrible thing. But Samuel Twentyman, was in Archibald's regiment. Because he was a lieutenant colonel, which I think is a lower rank.
Okay.
So he went to the West Indies to serve under Archibald.
Very cool.
They went together. And the West Indies is a big departure from Canada.
Mm.
Very, very different. He was posted to St. Lucia, specifically.
Okay.
Which is an island in the Caribbean.
Excellent.
North of Barbados and south of Dominica.
Okay, okay.
Because I checked. And it is so beautiful.
Yeah, a bit.
Oh, I was looking at the photos and the, like, the official tourist site.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think most countries have one. And it just looks amazing. It actually looks paradisical. It's beautiful. They have a program where you can, like, plan to stay there for a year. And while you're there, they'll organize, like, work for you and trips, experiences you can do during the year.
Very cool.
It looks amazing.
Should we do that? Or?
I really want to. It would be a very different podcast style if we were doing it from there.
We'd be so much more relaxed.
Mm-hmm. It's everything you would imagine. White sands, rainforests. It's absolutely stunning.
Sounds beautiful.
If you've been, I want to hear about it.
Mm, absolutely.
Make me jealous, please. Let me live vicariously through you. So Archibald was posted there.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're talking about how beautiful it is now, but we have to remember that he was posted there in the 1700s.
Mm.
So he's not there. He doesn't really have any business being there because they're there colonizing St. Lucia.
Yeah.
Britain had colonized St. Lucia by this time, and it kind of passed between the hands of Britain and France for a couple hundred years.
Oh, yeah.
They decided they owned it, even though people were already living there.
Yeah.
So Archibald was there maintaining the colony, and St. Lucia was an important place, an important port for the sugar trade.
Okay, yeah.
Which means it was important to the slave trade, which was happening at that time. So Archibald's part of that. We can't get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
He's in St. Lucia. He's there maintaining order, and the order isn't fair on the indigenous people who live there.
Yeah.
And the slaves who were brought there against their will.
Absolutely.
Back to Archibald, though. He's in St. Lucia. He's doing his thing. And it seems that while he was there, he developed an illness that was referred to at the time as St. Lucia fever.
Oh.
Now, I tried to look into this a bit to see what the illness actually was that they called this. I couldn't really tell. It could have been yellow fever.
Okay.
Which was common at the time and really, really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
If he did have yellow fever, he was not having a good time.
Mm.
If you don't know, because I didn't, you catch yellow fever from mosquitoes.
Okay.
Mosquitoes carry it, so they bite you and you get the illness. And it can lead to fever. Lots of aches and pains, vomiting, and like a lot of bleeding. We can leave it at that.
Yeah.
It's not nice. You don't want to have yellow fever. But it also, I don't know how to say this. Let me check.
Dengue fever.
Okay.
Oh, I thought it was dengue fever.
That's exactly why. Dengue fever. It could have been dengue fever, which is pretty horrible too. It's also spread by mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think even in the present day, there's not a vaccine against dengue fever.
Mm.
You can only deal with it. You can't take a vaccine to prevent it. You can just keep yourself safe from mosquitoes because it's also spread by mosquitoes.
I read a while back a travel blog about a guy who was in Southeast Asia who caught it, and he was in his hostel and just had three apocalyptically awful days before he was basically able to leave his room.
It's awful.
Yeah.
It's really awful. And if you're unlucky and it develops into severe dengue fever, it can lead to aches, pains, vomiting, trouble breathing, and just losing consciousness completely.
Oh, no.
It's really, really bad. Not nice. So I don't know exactly what it was that Archibald had, but it was something along these lines.
Mm-hmm.
And it was known as St. Lucia fever back then. And from what we can tell, he was really, really ill with whatever it was that he came down with. It got him good. And it didn't just affect his physical health. The people who knew him, so the friends that I spoke about, the people that he served with, and the people later when he came home, talked about how much he had changed mentally and emotionally.
Oh no.
After having this fever. He completely changed. He wasn't the same person.
That's mental.
Yeah. And if you found that ominous, good. Because you should.
Mr. Hyde's come home.
Kind of, yeah. So it seems like it did something to him mentally. Like maybe, or maybe that altered his brain in some way. I'm not sure.
It's crazy that can happen. I wonder if that still happened. Or, because there wouldn't have been much treatment for it. And I know you said there's no vaccine for dengue fever. But I imagine you can get treatment to help you through.
Yeah, yeah, you can. If you catch, like, dengue fever doesn't always turn out to be that severe. You can treat it.
Yeah.
But you can't prevent it in the same way that you can get a vaccine for other diseases.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
So it doesn't always turn into severe dengue fever.
But I wonder if that still happens, that it can be so bad that just it changes your brain forever.
Maybe.
Weird.
I'd fully believe it, because it sounds like it's awful.
Yeah.
When he was still in St. Lucia, Archibald actually had to be held down in his sickbed by other soldiers at one point. He kept lashing out at people in a violent way, if they came too close to him, if they spoke to him. Even his friends, his close friends, who came to visit him because they heard how unwell he was, they wanted to see if he was okay, he wasn't having any of it. He didn't recognise any of them. He had no idea who they were, so he was lashing out at them.
That's a shame.
And it was like he never knew them,
mm-hmm.
which just sounds awful.
That does. That's horrendous for everyone involved.
Yeah.
Him and his friends.
Yeah. In Kate Morgan's book, which is called Murder, I think it's Murder, A Biography, it's really good. And that book heavily influenced this episode, because this is where I first learned about Archibald.
I think you've mentioned her book on here before.
It's very good. I highly suggest you give it a read. She talks about Archibald being sent from St. Lucia to Barbados to recover from his fever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just to the south, if you remember. On this voyage, because they're going by sea, there is no little jet plane to take him from one to the other. He was incredibly ill, and apparently he was contagious. So he passed the fever on to one of the servants who was attending to him.
Oh, no.
Who was, like, looking after him. And his servant became so sick and so confused that he threw himself overboard.
Ooh.
Because he couldn't handle the fever.
That's mental.
Yeah. If that's true, that's horrifying.
That is.
Archibald was back in Scotland by 1789. This was 10 years after he was initially sent to St. Lucia. So there's a bit of time difference here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure exactly when it was he got sick and when he returned. We just know he was back in Scotland by 1789. But when he returned to the UK, he spent time in London and Edinburgh. He kind of went between both. His behaviour was really erratic and not typical for what people knew him to be. Before joining the military, he was known for his kindness, for being really generous, and he was known among the men who served under him for being a really great and a really thoughtful leader.
Mm.
They really liked serving with him. He was well-kept, like, tidy, neat. He was disciplined.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the things you would expect from a military man of that time. If you have an image in your head, that's kind of what he fit. Mm-hmm. That's who he was. But when he came home, that Archibald that everyone knew disappeared. Like, he just wasn't the same. He wasn't that person anymore. He would disappear for days on end, and nobody knew where he was. He would just go. And he wouldn't plan things. He would just leave. He would drink heavily, which would make things even worse because his behaviour would become even more erratic when he was drinking, as you'd expect, because alcohol is not going to help whatever mental illness is going on there.
Nope.
One of his friends that he met when he returned was pretty horrified when they ran into each other again. His friend hadn't seen him since he came home.
Mm-hmm.
He had known Archibald to have a full head of brown hair, like, fairly typical. He wasn't that old at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But when he ran into him after he came home, it was stark white.
Oh, that would be startling.
Mm-hmm. And it was very clear that Archibald wasn't looking after himself.
Yeah.
Because he was untidy, slobbish, like, dirty. He wasn't well kept the way that he typically had been. He wasn't tidy. He was the opposite. Mm-hmm. He was not taking care of himself. And it seemed like he was tormented.
Well, that's what it seems to me like. He's being haunted by something. Ew. That's so vivid with the white hair.
Mm-hmm.
I think that adds to, like, the haunting aspect. He's seen some things, man.
Well, that, or just, you can't imagine that level of stress.
Because
I know that, like, stress can make you go grey prematurely. That's a thing.
Mm-hmm.
But to have your whole head completely white.
Yeah, to have the whole not to 60.
Mm-hmm.
Just kind of a lot.
So, a bit of a warning here. We're going to be talking a little bit about self-harm and suicidal thoughts. So if that's not for you, you can skip ahead a few seconds. If we've remembered, we've put the warning at the start of the episode. But just look after yourself. In 1789, the same year he came home, it looks like Archibald tried to take his own life.
Mm.
In one source, I read that he cut his own hand.
Mm.
That's what they said. Really badly. While he was riding in a carriage through the grass market in Edinburgh. But there are differing reasons for this injury, and there's even different accounts as to where the injury happened. It's not very clear. In one version, he used his own pocket knife to cut himself.
Mm-hmm.
And they say that he cut his hand, but it seems like it was a very severe injury.
Yeah.
In another version, he claimed that there was broken glass in the carriage and he accidentally cut himself on the glass. But when people searched, there was no broken glass in the carriage at all. In Kate Morgan's book, she says that he tried to take his own life in the lodging house he was staying in, not in a carriage at all.
Oh, okay.
So there's differing versions of this. But regardless of what happened or whether he meant to hurt himself, it was a serious injury and he had to be treated by a doctor for the wound for some time to recover. Now, he was treated by a doctor called William Fackerson.
Fackerson, probably.
Anyway, William seems to have genuinely cared about Archibald and his well-being. And we'll get into that more later, but William appears again in our story.
Mm.
He seems like a good guy. In 1790, the following year, it wasn't very clear where Archibald was living permanently.
Mm.
But he bounced between Gilmerton, which was the family home, Edinburgh and London. He's seen and stayed in several places in between. Mm-hmm. But like I said, he would regularly disappear where people didn't know where he was.
Mm-hmm.
And he would disappear at weird hours of the night. He would just go. It was like he had no concept of night and day anymore. The fancy would just take him to go somewhere and he would go.
So weird.
Which sounds a lot like dementia to me.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've heard it before where people kind of lose sense of time.
Mm-hmm.
They get confused about what time it is and they'll go and do their routine. Sorry, they'll go do their routine in the middle of the night or they'll just go.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I'm not saying that's what he had, it's just what it reminded me of.
Yeah, it's just weird. Mm-hmm. You can't really place, well, you can place why it's weird. It's weird because it's weird, but there doesn't seem to be anything distinctly weird.
In the summer of 1790, he randomly appeared in Greenock to see Major John Mackay, who was the mentor figure that I talked about earlier. They were close friends. He went to go and see John, but he just turned up in the middle of the night.
That would be
with no warning. He just appeared.
That would be very unsettling.
There was no plan, no nothing. And John was woken from his bed.
Mm.
But John welcomed him in. He was happy to see him. He just wasn't expecting him. Yeah. And it was a very strange time for him to appear.
If one of our friends arrived at like 3 a.m., you'd be like, oh, hey, yeah, come in. It's fine.
Well, absolutely. You would never turn anyone away, but it would be strange. And for me, I would be worried.
Well, they'd just be straight off the bat like, is everything okay?
Because that's not typical. No. It's not normal. If someone's appearing at that time of night, you would always assume something terrible's happened.
Especially if presumably he's travelled across the country. We're not a very big country, but...
Well, yeah, if he's come from Gilmerton or Edinburgh.
Mm-hmm.
That's still far.
Yeah, it's a fair way to travel in 1790.
In the middle of the night.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how worried John was at that time.
Absolutely.
To have him just appear.
Yep.
Later in 1790, Archibald was in London. Like I said, he kind of bounced between.
Mm-hmm.
And he invited a friend called Captain Miller to come and meet him at his hotel to catch up. He wanted to see him. Captain Miller said, yes, I'd love to see you. That'd be great. He turned up at the hotel where Archibald said he was staying on Archibald's instructions. He told him how to get there, when to meet, yada, yada. Archibald wasn't there.
Mm.
And he was nowhere to be found in the hotel.
Was he staying there?
Well, I think so, but eventually, much later in the day, Captain Miller managed to track him down to a coffee house in London. So it seemed like he had no intention of meeting him.
That's very, very dementia as well, isn't it?
He was just somewhere else.
It's so weird. Mm-hmm. Ooh, I'm feeling very ominous.
Mm-hmm. You should be.
Yeah.
In 1794, it seems that Archibald spent time in Haddington Jail in Edinburgh after the doctor, William, saw him on Northbridge in Edinburgh. And he was convinced enough by what he saw, which isn't clear, that he felt Archibald was a danger to himself. And he believed he was going to hurt himself. So he was incarcerated.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's obviously the best thing to do with someone who looks like they're going to harm themselves.
Yeah.
Over the years that I've talked about, because this is a span of like 5 years so far, he confided in friends that he could see blue devils.
Oh, no.
He was hallucinating, and he believed that he was being followed and harassed by what he called blue devils.
Mm.
And I don't have a specific date, but at some point during this time, he also spent time at Edinburgh Bedlam.
Is that a mental hospital?
Mm-hmm. For insanity.
Mm.
And that's in quotes. Yeah. That was the medical term that they used at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He spent some time there because he was not well.
Yep.
And yeah, Edinburgh Bedlam, it's kind of like Bedlam in London. Yeah, it's where they put people who they deemed insane, even though a lot of them weren't insane.
Yeah.
I don't like that term, but they didn't have the kind of problems that people claim they did, but they put them in Bedlam because they didn't know where else to put them.
And they didn't have the same knowledge and vocabulary.
No.
We do now.
No, they didn't have, they definitely didn't have the same understanding.
So was he retired? I think maybe you said and I missed it.
Well, I don't know. I mentioned it later on. I think he was discharged from the army.
Yeah.
He's back home.
I'm assuming that's what happened when he came home.
Yes.
From, like, even like a medical discharge.
Yeah, that was my understanding, that he was discharged medically.
Yeah.
Because by this time he would have been nearly 50. Can't talk. Between 40 and 50.
Which is fair for a military career, and then to be that ill. I think that's kind of fair to assume he was discharged, retired.
Yeah, from what I understood, he was medically discharged, and this was him home permanently.
Yeah.
And I think, I'm assuming he was on an army pension.
Yes.
I think that was a thing then.
Fair to say. I'm sure it was for a major.
Yeah, exactly. So that's my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
His friend Samuel Twentyman, who I talked about, said this about Archibald later on. In my own mind, I never had the smallest doubt that Sir Archibald's intellects were deranged in consequence of that fever, and that he had periodical attacks that rendered him insane, and consequently not master of his own actions.
Mm.
So again, I don't like that term, but they're using the term insane in a medical sense. That's the only term they had to understand what was going on.
Yeah, well, it's a quote.
I know, but I'm just saying, I don't like saying it. There's just, it comes up again and again, because that was the medical term.
Yeah. I wonder if some of his problems stemmed from alcoholism.
Maybe.
And even,
but there were no records that he was a heavy drinker before he came home.
Mm.
So I don't know whether he was drinking to deal with his hallucinations.
Yeah, self-medicating.
Yeah, maybe, as a way of dealing with it. Which I fully believe, because that happens. So I don't know. There was nothing to suggest that he was a heavy drinker when he was in the army.
Yeah.
Because all the accounts say that he was very disciplined and he was a good leader, so it doesn't strike me as someone who's drinking heavily.
No.
But it could have been made worse once he started drinking and then it was a steeper decline.
Maybe.
That's fully possible.
Mm-hmm.
Now this, everything I've said up until now is bad enough. But in 1795, Archibald's father died.
Oh.
David Kinloch, who I talked about. His passing meant that Archibald's older brother, Francis, became the Baronet of Gilmerton. The family title passed to him, like we talked about at the beginning.
Yep.
Now, I got confused during my research initially. Francis became the Baronet of Gilmerton, but Archibald was actually the one who inherited Gilmerton House.
Interesting.
Francis had his own home near Haddington, which was a village nearby Gilmerton.
Uh-huh.
Archibald inherited Gilmerton House as the second born.
Okay, yeah, that seems reasonable.
I wrote something different initially in my script, and then I found out that, and I had to go back and change it because I'd gotten all confused.
Yeah.
Because I thought Francis had it, but no, Archibald had Gilmerton House. That was his home.
Yep. Very nice.
With me.
Yep.
He's not the Baron, no. But he has the house.
Yeah. On all kind of house that Francis has, his own big mansion estate somewhere.
I can't remember the name. I did see it.
Oh, it's got a name. That suggests it's pretty grand.
Yeah, it's a big estate house.
He's not just in a wee cottage.
No. It's very similar to Gilmerton House. Mm-hmm. It's a big house and estate and things like that.
Well, because I imagine the only reason he wouldn't inherit it is that he didn't need it, mm-hmm. per se. Mm.
Now, Francis seems to have had a lot of patience with his younger brother. Everything I read suggested that he was a really good guy. He was patient. He was really forgiving with him. Obviously knowing that his brother was struggling and had a lot going on that he couldn't understand.
Yeah.
So he was very patient and very forgiving,
mm-hmm.
which you don't hear about very often.
No, not really.
At one point, while their father was still alive, Archibald hit Francis across the face at dinner during an argument over something.
Ooh.
And Francis just let it go. Like, no retaliation, no nothing. He mm-hmm. just moved on, let it happen, and that was it.
Jeez, I think I know where this is going.
Really? What do you mean?
Oh, no.
Things got a lot worse between the brothers, and for the siblings generally, after their father's death, because Archibald became obsessed with the idea that Francis had kept money and gifts from Archibald that their father had left him in his will. He became obsessive over the idea. Mm-hmm. He kept citing these papers that he had seen Francis getting rid of. You know, he was processing the estate and everything. Francis was burning papers that weren't important anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The way that, you know, it happens when someone's died, you have to go through everything.
Yeah.
He was going through all of their father's papers and he was burning the ones that didn't matter. Archibald saw him doing this and believed that on these papers that Francis had burned were the details of the extra things that their father had left him.
That's such a shame.
Because
mm-hmm. of such a difficult time, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And it can bring out the worst in you.
So he knew in his head, he firmly believed that he had been cheated by his brother.
Mm.
And he knew that these papers were the proof and he'd burned them.
Oh, no.
Now, this doesn't seem to have been the case. I'll say this up front. Archibald was left £1,300 by his father in his will, which would be about £166,400 today.
That's pretty good.
Very generous. Mm-hmm. Along with the mansion. Like,
well, yeah.
He has the house. He has this money. And this is where in my notes I have that I think he would be receiving his army pension.
Mm-hmm.
So he had money coming in. He had enough to get by. You know, he got what he was due, yeah. so to speak.
So he's either got greedy or he's drank it all.
So, well, in my mind, I don't even know if either of those are the reason. I wonder if he just is part of the way that his brain is working, where he's just fixated on it. In the way that someone with dementia or mental illness might, where you know, you fixate on this one thing.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a delusion that you know this is true,
mm-hmm.
even though it isn't. And you can't think of anything else.
Yeah, you can't get past it or put it to bed or anything. Mm.
That was what I thought.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Now, this got so bad that Francis actually sought out legal advice.
Oh, wow.
Because he wanted to make sure that he had done the right thing and nothing could be challenged about the will and the way he had handled the estate. Because in his mind, he'd done everything he could. He'd done everything right, but he wanted to make sure everything was okay. So he got the advice of a lawyer, which suggests that he was worried about his brother and what his brother might do to challenge the decisions he'd made. And the lawyer said that, you know, everything's fine. Like, this is all okay.
Mm-hmm.
The papers that exist show that you've done everything the way you were supposed to. There's no challenge here. You've done right by your father.
Yeah.
Which would be a relief.
Yep, done, and he's done extra due diligence to ensure everything's above board.
Because I can imagine that if someone is questioning you that hard and genuinely believes you've done something wrong, you might start questioning yourself. And, oh, God, yeah. Like, what if I made a mistake?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he seems to really care about his brother. So, you know, you'd want to make sure you're doing right by him. And it would hurt to have someone, like, doubting you.
Yeah, especially your brother, who you obviously care a great deal about.
Yeah.
That'd be hard.
By mid-1795, Francis was so worried about Archibald and his mental state that he, and I think their wider family, convinced him to come back to Gilmerton and to stay there more permanently. Because remember I said he'd kind of been bouncing about.
Mm-hmm.
Presumably so that he could be close to them. Because Francis didn't live far away. And so that they could look after him and make sure he was okay and you know, not a danger to himself. They had actually organised for a doctor to visit Gilmerton to help check in on Archibald and look after him to see what could be done to help him. But I read that the doctor and nurse team that came to look after him and check on them had a straitjacket with them.
Mm.
Now, straitjackets were a lot more common at this point. This is almost the 1800s than they are now, because doctors really had no idea how to care for someone with severe mental illness.
Yeah.
They had no understanding, and straitjackets were used to contain and restrain someone who might hurt themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But they're cruel and they're awful.
Yep.
They didn't know any better.
No. Should only be used for Hannibal Lecter.
Yes, in fiction.
Yeah.
Now, Archibald wasn't happy with this arrangement. He was back at Gilmerton at this time, but he was not happy to be visited by this doctor, especially this doctor who had a straitjacket with them.
Yep.
And there was no way he was going to put up with that.
And Houdini. He's the other Houdini. One.
Actually, when I looked up straitjackets, there was equally as much information about their medical use and their escapist use. They're 50-50. It's absolutely bizarre.
Yeah, it is bizarre.
You have to, like, dislocate your shoulder.
Yeah, I remember finding that out and being utterly horrified.
Gives me the bulk.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that it would still be impressive to see someone escape out of a straitjacket, even though they're not used, I don't think, generally.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think they're still used.
I don't even know if they're legal. I know that they're not supposed to be used because they're deemed cruel and just bad for you. They can really injure you. They can, like... One of the things I read is if people are in a straitjacket, either for too long or too tight, it causes blood to pool in their elbow joint.
Ooh.
Because of the way that they're, like, your arms are restrained against your chest really tightly, so you can't hurt yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's not done properly or you're in it too long, the blood starts pooling around your elbows because it can't circulate.
Mm.
And that's just one of the things it can cause, but that stuck in my head is just so awful.
Well, because I think you'd sometimes... If it was being medically used, you'd be left in it, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
You'd just be put into a straitjacket and then put into your cell. Ugh.
I would be very surprised if I found out they are legal.
Yeah.
I don't believe they're legal.
But, circling around, that even though they're not used, they're not legal. And the only time you ever see them used is in escapism, it's still impressive to see it done. Which is weird, because it's not... I imagine it must have been even more impressive to know that's how people were, how dangerous, inverted commas, people were restrained to see someone escape out of them. Must have been almost frightening as much as impressive.
They're such an awful thing.
Yeah.
I feel like they're awful just to look at. Like, they give, oh, no.
No.
So Archibald wasn't putting up with this.
Mm.
He was not having anyone in the house who... would be willing to put him into a straitjacket.
I mean, it's not a sign of faith, is it? Oh, yeah, this doctor is going to check you out, make sure everything's okay. Like, okay, yeah, that might be nice. Why does he have a straitjacket? Oh, nothing. It's just in case. He's not necessarily going to use it. Like, well, you obviously think he might need to use it.
Because the threat of that would be really scary.
Yeah, absolutely.
Knowing that that was in the house and you were the intended wearer.
Yeah.
There's no one else that's going to be putting it.
And if he spent time in Edinburgh Bedlam, he's possibly worn one before.
Mm-hmm. So Archibald took to wandering round Gilmerton House, just kind of aimlessly, the big family mansion, the ancestral seat of his family, with a blunderbuss.
Oh, no.
the big gun.
Yep.
You know, with the really wide barrel.
Yeah, the one that goes out at the end.
Yeah, he would just stride around the house, wander around the house with this gun.
Mm.
And obviously no one is going to come near him with a big weapon.
No. He's also in a dressing gown in my head for extra madness.
Because even if someone wasn't prone to bouts of paranoia and violence, like Archibald was, it would be very strange and very intimidating for that person to wander the halls of their mansion with this giant gun.
It would be unsettling.
Like, even if it was someone who wasn't suffering the way that Archibald was.
Not good.
So he wasn't responding well. And at the same time, there were moments where Archibald would just throw himself on the floor and start screaming. It wouldn't always have a cause. It would just happen.
Mental.
And he would start wailing.
Which is kind of a lot.
Yeah. And it was at this time that when Francis would stay to check on his brother, he would lock his bedroom door at night, which he had never done before. He would make sure it was locked before he went to sleep because Archibald was just wandering.
Yeah.
And he was worried what his brother might do.
Well, it'd be equally scary just to hear him walking past your door repeatedly.
Possibly with a weapon.
Yeah.
I feel so bad for them both. It sounds horrendous for both of them.
It's just awful every which way, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. They're both suffering in different ways. Francis found out that Archibald wasn't staying in his room at night, like they thought that he was. He wasn't in his room and he wasn't sleeping, like you would expect and hope. He had taken to spending nighttime wandering around the forests that surrounded the house. He would just disappear all night. No one really knew where he went. There wasn't really much they could do about it.
That's not good.
Because presumably they tried locking the doors.
Yes. Ooh, no.
So very unnerving and worrying, because it just seems to be... What's the word? Escalating.
Yes.
We're now in mid-April 1795.
Okay, yep. Yeah.
All right. Archibald is getting worse. He's not getting better. But he's... It's difficult, because his bouts of illness are significantly worse, but they don't last. There's periods where he can conduct himself normally, he can chat with friends, he can do things for himself, and then there's other times where he's not himself.
So unusual.
So there's, I don't want to say waves, that's not quite what I mean.
It takes a turn.
Kind of, yeah. It comes and it goes. So Archibald had gone to have dinner with some friends, and he was travelling back to Gilmerton with them in a carriage, but they jumped out because they had to pee. When they did this, Archibald got out of the carriage, but started walking back to Haddington, the village where they had been having dinner.
That would be odd.
He just left,
And
they couldn't find him. He vanished. His friends were looking for him in the woods and in the dark, and he was nowhere to be found.
Yeah.
So they sent the carriage driver to go find him. And I think with the carriage, I think he had the carriage with him and he was driving it. It wasn't just the driver walking. But he caught up to him, and Archibald ordered the driver to take him to Haddington, which didn't make any sense. But the driver took him back to Gilmerton instead.
Oh, that was good of him.
Yeah, I think that was a good call. But when Archibald got back, he basically marched off to his room and started waving around a pistol and started telling everyone how really unwell he was.
That's not what you want to hear when someone has a gun.
No. So then I think he locked himself in his room and he wasn't speaking to anybody.
Oh, no.
So a smart move from the driver, taking him home.
Absolutely.
And that can't have been easy because Archibald's the boss.
Yeah, it's not his position. It's not his place to decide.
So it shows either that he could see that Archibald wasn't well, or he was worried about him.
Yeah.
That he overrode his order to make sure that he was safe.
Or maybe everyone else who sent him out was like, just bring him back.
Maybe. Like,
no matter what, just bring him back.
Maybe. But yeah, a good call from him. That can't have been easy. The morning of 14th of April, 1795.
Yep.
That's where we are. Archibald was seen wandering around the woods outside Gilmerton like he did often before the sun came up. He was spotted before dawn. And he told people that he ran into that he was out planting things, but he wasn't.
Just doing a little pre-dawn gardening.
Yeah, he was just wandering around, which he did. And then later that day, he barricaded himself in his room again, which I have to assume became a kind of refuge for him.
Yes.
If he's experiencing all this turmoil and upheaval having bouts where he doesn't recognise people and he just wants to leave. His room must have become somewhat of a sanctuary.
Yeah. It's sounding a lot like early onset dementia.
Later that night, he came downstairs, he came out of his room, but he started demanding laudanum. Unfortunately, because he wanted to fall asleep permanently.
Oh, that's the drug, isn't it?
Yes, I'm going to explain what laudanum is right now. Mm-hmm. But he still had his pistols at this point. He was still carrying his pistols around, but he was demanding laudanum because he wanted to die.
Yeah.
Now, laudanum, I think I'm saying that right, was popular up until the early 1900s.
Mm.
So not that long ago. But it's not popular anymore because it's widely known that laudanum is highly addictive. Seriously, it's made from opium and it has morphine and codeine in it.
Ooh, I mean, that's going to make you feel pretty good, isn't it?
It's super addictive.
And that would help basically everything.
Mm-hmm. And doctors used to prescribe it. It was a medicine. Yeah. It was mostly used to deal with and manage pain, from what I understand. In a similar way to morphine and codeine, that's what they're used for. But you would get prescribed laudanum if you had a cough, because it would suppress a cough.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't be coughing anymore, but you're addicted to laudanum.
Good thing there isn't currently a drug that gets prescribed willy-nilly highly addictive.
I know.
At least we don't have that anymore.
Opium, morphine and codeine.
I know. This makes you feel better, like, oh, fuck, yeah, it does. It
makes you feel nothing. Yeah. You don't feel anything. But that's what he wanted, even though he wasn't...
Yeah.
Seemingly, he wasn't in any pain. I don't know that. Like, mm-hmm. Maybe he was. But that's what he wanted. And from what I read, he wanted it in excess because he wanted to hurt himself.
Yeah.
It wasn't medicinal at that point.
No.
From what I understand. So it's now the evening of the 14th of April. Francis had come over to see how Archibald was and to have dinner with him. And there were a few different people at the house as well. Some of their friends had come over with Francis to all have dinner together. Now, Archibald wouldn't come out of his room. He had gone back in, he wouldn't come out. Even though Francis kept leaving their dinner to go up to his room and try to encourage him to join them, to come down and to see how he was. But Archibald wasn't talking to him, he wouldn't come out. The other guests who were at the dinner said later that Francis seemed to be the only person who could calm Archibald down if he got himself into like a panic or an episode. No one else understood him quite like Francis did. And Francis was really making an effort to bring him into the fold and make sure he had a nice time. Which makes what happened next particularly tragic.
That's what we've been gearing up to.
Yes. This is the bit.
Mm-hmm.
At 3 a.m. that night, the party is still going. I've read at this point they're passing around port and they're just chatting. You know, the way that you do.
Mm-hmm.
With port, which I never have. At 3 a.m, Archibald finally came out of his room and he came downstairs to join the dinner party. But he came down with two pistols, as he had been doing for days. Now, I read two versions of what happened next. One, Francis came out to check on his brother, hearing him coming down the stairs, and saw that he had the pistols. He knew this wasn't a good thing because there was lots of people in the house, so he started encouraging his brother to go back to bed.
Yeah.
Just, you know, go back to your room, it's okay, go to sleep, we'll talk in the morning. Don't come down with guns. The other version is that, again, Francis heard that Archibald was up, but he encouraged his brother to go back to bed purely because it was late. It was 3 a.m. and he knew he wasn't well.
Mm.
But in this version, Francis didn't know his brother had the guns.
Okay.
Because Archibald had them hidden in, I don't know, his waistband under a coat. In both versions, though, the brothers are standing quite close together on the stairs that Archibald's just come down. And then Archibald shot Francis at point blank range in the chest.
Oh, man.
I know, it's heartbreaking.
That is heartbreaking.
A worst case scenario for everyone.
Well, that's sad.
The dinner guests ran when they heard the noise, because they've heard a gun go off, and they reported that they saw Francis fall backwards, and they also saw Archibald with the gun. So there's no doubt what had happened. They knew absolutely that Archibald had shot Francis.
Yep.
Because they saw it seconds after it happened. Archibald was almost immediately put into the put into the straitjacket that the doctor had brought, because he was now a danger to everybody there.
I don't necessarily disagree with him.
In their eyes. And apparently this was done by the servants of the house to make sure he didn't hurt anyone else. Francis, what?
Sorry, just like not hurt anyone else. Can't let anyone get hurt. Let the servants do it. Well, if the servants get hurt, well, who cares? They're servants.
Yeah, I guess. Francis was carried to his room. He was still alive.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a lot of pain, but he was still conscious. And he was actually the one that called for the doctor. He wrote the letter for the doctor himself. Because remember, this is 1795. You can't phone the doctor.
That's a very good point.
You can't call 999. There's no ambulance.
Did he just write help?
See, the wild thing is, like, he must have written enough for the doctor to understand. And he's been shot.
Yeah.
And he wrote it himself.
Yeah, did he just sit down at a desk like, oh man, this hurts, but I'll just get this penned real quick.
So the fact that he wrote more than help is quite unreal.
That is.
Now, what I don't understand is the letter was brought to two doctors, Dr. James Holm and Dr. Francis Holm,
mm-hmm.
who I think were brothers, but I don't know. They were all the way in Edinburgh.
Oh.
So it's not far from Edinburgh, it's only a few miles, but you'd think you'd find a closer doctor.
Maybe
because he's been shot.
Yeah. Ooh, well, maybe they wanted the best doctor.
Presumably, yes, or that was the doctor that knew them the best.
Yeah.
But in an emergency scenario, I would want the quickest doctor.
Yes. Maybe that was the quickest doctor.
Maybe. I'm not sure. It just...
That's now, mad, though, yeah.
With a modern lens, that just seems like lunacy.
Yeah.
But that's what they did. They went all the way to Edinburgh to get the doctors, and the doctors made it to Gilmerton at about 9:30. So 6.5 hours later,
because
remember that happened at 3 a.m.
Yeah. Did they put some leeches on it or something?
Well, there wasn't much they could do.
No.
He'd been shot in the chest. Like, they were kind of stumped. Like, what do we do? So I imagine they just sort of managed the pain and tried to stop any bleeding.
Yeah.
But another doctor, Dr. Benjamin Bell, also arrived at Gilmerton from Edinburgh. So I'm assuming he was called for as well.
Mm-hmm.
And he arrived a little later on the 15th. I think he got there, I think I read somewhere it was like 11:30, it was a couple hours later. But when he got there, he must have coordinated the three doctors, because they all worked on Francis, and they managed to remove the bullet.
Oh, wow. That I did not see coming.
Isn't that insane?
That is insane.
Now, I read that, because he got shot in the chest,
mm-hmm.
the bullet had passed almost all the way through his body, because they took it out of his back. It was near his spine.
Oh, yep.
So, right, but like, 1795, and they managed to remove the bullet.
Yeah, that's mental. Especially if they got it from the other side.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
I don't know what else they managed to do for him, but that alone is nutty.
Did they check the depth just like with a finger?
Stick it in.
That's the third knuckle, so if we'll put that beside him. Oh, it's almost on the other end.
God. Unfortunately, it didn't do much for Francis.
Sure. I know, we'll shoot another bullet in and that'll knock the other bullet out the back.
Oh, no.
Sorry, continue.
He survived the next day. He lived through the 15th. That was when the doctors had arrived. But he died at 11 p.m. on the 16th. So that was 44 hours after he was shot.
It's longer than I thought he was going to survive, but it's not long enough.
And it was slow and it was painful. Not a nice way to go.
Not at all.
Apparently the main thing that was on his mind was the state his brother would be in. He was worried about him for what he had done and how he would be feeling.
That's such a shame.
And he specifically ordered for no one to call the police or the authorities. He didn't want his brother arrested.
Mental.
It made me well up a bit when I was doing the research, because I can't imagine being in that position and being so close to death and still being concerned for your brother.
Yeah.
And it surprised me, because mental illness was so misunderstood. So for him to have that greater understanding that, you know, I'm not going to blame him.
Yeah, this isn't him. This is whatever has hold of him.
And he still cared for him.
Wow.
Even when he shot him.
That is heartbreaking.
Unless it was about family reputation, but that's not the impression I got.
Yeah.
I don't think he was keeping Archibald from the police just because it would look bad on the Kinlochs. I think he genuinely cared about him.
I wondered that with the differing stories of how he cut himself.
Yeah, I wondered that too.
If there is the accidental version was kind of put out there by the family.
I would believe face. It. Mm-hmm. Even him himself, Archibald might have said it.
Oh, quite possibly.
In one
yeah.
story, he did that it was an accident because mm-hmm. you know that still exists where like you feel guilt,
mm-hmm.
even though like you're not in control and you're not well. That one I would believe, but I wasn't sure. I didn't think that they didn't call the police just for face. Mm-hmm. I think Francis didn't want anything to happen to his brother.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to choose to believe at the very least.
I think he had a greater understanding that it wasn't him.
Mm-hmm.
But Francis did die, and Archibald was arrested.
I mean, he should be arrested.
Mm-hmm. He was arrested for murder. Now, Kate Morgan wrote it really well in her book. She said, Archibald's ascension to the baronetcy upon his older brother's death was almost immediately followed by arrest for his murder.
Mm.
So it seems like they called him fairly soon after Francis died.
Yeah. Well, because it's nice that his brother, that Francis wanted to protect him, but he might do it again.
Yeah, I can see their concern.
Yeah, like I wouldn't want to not call the police. Well, I'd be very torn. I was like, well, no, he murdered him. Like, we need to stop him, or he might accidentally murder someone else.
It's a tricky thing, isn't it?
Whether it was his fault, so to speak, or not.
Well, see, you've hit upon our core issue.
Mm.
Because you may have been wondering why this story qualifies for a podcast episode.
Well, that was pretty good.
Now, what makes this story different from other murder stories? You know, it happens a lot.
Yep.
Well, what makes this case unique is what happened during the trial.
Okay.
Which is what we're going to get into now.
Hmm.
But you needed to know the backstory to understand why the trial went the way it did. It was a big deal because he was a member of the aristocracy and he was being charged with killing his own brother. Like that's going to turn heads and people are going to pay attention.
Make the ladies gasp and clutch their pearls.
Yeah. But on top of that, the legal team and the other lawyers involved were big names in themselves.
Oh,
this
yeah.
was a high-profile case. It was a big case.
Mm-hmm.
Archibald was brought to court on the 30th of June. So it's like 2 months since the murder.
Yeah.
And I wrote in my notes that I was going to say he was in jail for those 2 months. But I didn't read that anywhere. That could be nonsense.
Hmm.
So I need to not just make things up in the gaps.
Yeah.
Because that's not good. So I don't know whether he was, you know, house arrest or whether he was in jail for that period.
Who knows?
I don't know. Now, his trial started on June 30th, like I said. And when Archibald entered the court to give his plea, something happened that would make this trial particularly unique.
Okay.
Archibald pleaded not guilty by reason of insanity.
Is this the first time that happened?
It is one of the very first cases that the insanity defence, in quotes, was used in a murder trial.
Oh, shit. I don't know how I didn't see that coming.
Well, you know, I didn't make it obvious. It may be more obvious if you've read the title of this episode and you're listening and you're not Kieran, but...
Oh, you damn listeners gained the edge on me.
Yes, this was one of the first times that it was actually used, and it's one of the best recorded early uses of the insanity defence.
Oh, shit. Well, I imagine you can't just skip to it, but so does he get off on manslaughter or something?
I can't tell you.
I mean, I want to know. Get to the good bit.
Listen then. Oh. Now, from what I understand, this wasn't the very first time. Some people had claimed insanity before, or sometimes the person, was it the defendant, didn't even claim it themselves. The people judging them, whether the judge or the jury, decided for them that they weren't fit to be found guilty.
Interesting.
But this is the first full case of it being used as a defence.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense.
So it's still special. It still has a part in legal history.
Yeah.
But I want to be clear that I'm not trying to say this is the very first time. But it's one of the fullest early records we have of the insanity defence.
I mean, by all accounts, he was pretty insane.
And this was globally, by the way.
Mm.
Not just in Scotland, but it happened in Scotland.
Jeez, oh. Woo, Scotland being insane.
I don't like that word. Let's get back to the trial.
Mm-hmm.
The prosecution, who they're the ones who want him to be punished.
Yep.
They wanted Archibald to be charged with murder.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt they had a pretty good case. to prove that he had murdered his brother.
You know, because he murdered someone, yep.
Yes. But you know what I mean? They felt that they had a case that he should be punished.
Yes.
Lots of witnesses had seen him do it. They had seen the pistols that he had in his hand. They saw Francis fall and the wound that was caused. They saw the gunshot. In some records, the dinner guests even say that they saw the flash of the pistol shot.
Mm.
So they saw him being murdered.
Yeah.
That's pretty compelling evidence. Mm-hmm. You can't really get away from that.
Yep.
Obviously, Francis' body had been examined by the doctors who had tried to save him. They knew he had been shot, so there's proof that he was shot by a gun.
Yep.
And Archibald was restrained after the murder, like I said, and found to be in possession of the gun that shot Francis.
It's pretty compelling.
I know this sounds pretty basic, but to be able to prove that in a court is a big deal.
Well, that's all the nuance, isn't it?
Yeah, like you can prove that these things happened.
Yeah.
Which you can't always. You have to sort of make, I don't want to say make assumptions, but you have to
allude to it.
But this is, it seems watertight. They have proof for all of these things.
Yeah.
The prosecution suggested that Archibald murdered Francis because he felt that he had cheated him out of his rightful inheritance.
Yep.
He thought that Francis had stolen money and gifts that were rightly his when he burned their father's papers. I think I read somewhere Archibald felt that he had been cheated out of about £200, which would be... Well, a pound in 1795 was worth almost £130 today.
So...
200 grand?
20 grand, I think.
Oh, I don't know. I don't do the numbers, you do the numbers. But he felt that he'd been cheated out of that. He had that figure in his head.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the fact that Archibald had the presence of mind to be upset about this fact, to be upset about the money and not getting his share, actually worked against his insanity plea.
Yeah.
Because the prosecution argued that these feelings aren't the feelings of someone they would deem insane, quotes. Because, you know, it's a motive for murder. They argued that he was resentful, he was jealous, he wanted more than he was due, and that's a motive for murder. And even though, remember, Francis' lawyer had looked over everything, and he said that it was all fine, what Francis had done had been perfectly legal and it was okay, but he had actually told Francis that Archibald and his siblings were getting more from their father's estate than they were legally obligated to get.
Okay.
They were getting more than they had to receive. So they were already getting a good deal. I say that with as much sensitivity as I can because their dad died. But, you know, Francis could have kept more.
They didn't just get a nickel and a kick in the teeth. Yeah. You know?
And the prosecution argued that wanting more than that was greedy, which gave Archibald a motive for murdering his brother.
Yep.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
A lot of the medical professionals who were called in to assess Archibald gave evidence that they didn't consider him insane. And again, this is the medical term. They didn't consider him insane. They basically argued that he didn't qualify because his insanity came in waves and it wasn't constant.
Yeah.
He had episodes where he was really unwell, but then he would be more himself.
Mm.
It wasn't consistent. There were times where he could go about life reasonably normally, but there were other times where he would have fits of mania.
Yes.
So they argued because it wasn't constant, it didn't count.
I suppose this is the lack of vocabulary we mentioned earlier,
yes,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
Where you are either insane or you're not.
Yes. There's no nuance. The law didn't recognise partial insanity.
Yeah.
That wasn't a thing. In terms of the law, which is very different from what people actually experience.
Yeah.
Because the law hadn't developed the way that it has now.
Because even to use the relevant terms, like you said, partial insanity. I mean, well, he had phases of insanity.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess if you are, you either are or you aren't, then that's more on the side of not being insane, isn't it? It's weird.
But I mean, it seems silly now because if you try to explain to someone that they have periods where they're really unwell, then they obviously always have a condition.
Well, yeah.
Like that makes sense.
It doesn't go away. It'll almost vary in intensity.
It doesn't matter that they're not 100% ill all of the time. Yeah. They still have this condition and it's something they live with.
Yeah.
But the law didn't see it that way. Because even now, there's a big difference between what the law will recognise and what we recognise in society.
Oh, I never thought about that. Probably is, isn't it?
They aren't always the same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the law didn't recognise partial insanity up until this point. In their eyes, he was, it's like you said, he was either insane or he wasn't. He was either capable of murder with the presence of mind to do so, or he wasn't. There was no in between.
Interesting.
Up until this point.
Yes.
Now, the prosecution had their pick of compelling witnesses because lots of people saw it happen. But Archibald's siblings were excused from testifying, which is unusual. But it was on the basis that it was deemed too upsetting for them to relive the night that their brother had died.
Is that unusual? I thought it would be fairly normal.
I don't think, well, I guess it would depend.
Yeah.
In my mind, I see it more often than not.
Yeah. Just to me, that seems fair. It's kind of like how you don't have to plead against your spouse.
That's legal, though. Legally, you don't have to.
Yeah, but in that vein, I can see it being that your family members get that same...
But, well, no, I think it's down to, like, the court's discretion. It's not the same. Spouses, you don't have to testify against your spouse legally. Yep. That is in law. But I don't think the same applies to your family. I think if you get called on to testify...
You've got to do it anyway.
I think so, yeah. But they decided that they didn't have to. I think the judge decided.
Yeah.
I don't know. I thought it was unusual. Because if the prosecution want to charge him, you'd think they'd be like, no, you have to. It was upsetting. It was terrible. That's why you have to talk about it. So that he's punished for it, because you've gone through so much.
Yeah.
That would be the spin.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I see it in my head anyway. Yep. Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Don't know.
Ultimately, the prosecution said, quote, "That degree of melancholy and depression of spirits, which, though it may border on insanity, is nevertheless accompanied with a sufficient share of judgment to discern good from evil and moral right from wrong, which never has and never can be sustained as a bar to a trial or a defence against punishment for a crime so atrocious as murder." What do you think about that?
I mean, it seems fair for the time. When you don't have the nuance, I think that is a reasonable thing to say. But it's unreasonable not to have the nuance. But that's much easier to say with the hindsight and the knowledge we have now.
Yeah, I think I can see their argument where they're appreciating that he was not himself.
Yeah.
But they argue that he was able to tell between right and wrong. And in their minds, that means he should be punished for doing the wrong because he knew it was wrong.
Yeah. I think that's fair. As fair as it can be at that time.
As the prosecution, that's their job.
Culturally, yeah.
Now to the defence, the other side. A lawyer called David Hume defended Archibald. And David Hume's uncle, who was also called David Hume, was one of Scotland's most famous and well-known philosophers. I don't know if you've heard of David Hume before.
I have heard of David Hume before.
He argued, this is very short and very basic, he argued that everything people know is learnt. All knowledge is learnt, and you aren't born with innate knowledge. He argued that for like the first time. He's a big deal. He's a big name. But that was his uncle.
Nice.
So his nephew, David Hume, he's defending Archibald, and he was a mega successful lawyer.
Damn. Do you think they're in a practice together, and they're all just like Hume, Hume, and Hume, or something?
Don't think so.
Yeah, you've contacted Hume and Hume.
The David Hume who supported Archibald, he wrote an important book on Scottish law called Commentaries on the Law of Scotland Respecting Trial for Crimes. He wrote it in 1797, and it still gets referenced to this day, over 200 years later.
That's quite something, especially for something as changing as the law.
Well, you would be surprised at how little changes.
Oh, yeah?
Presidents get set, and it's very difficult to change them. Like, a lot of time, a lot of deliberation has to be taken. That's why Kate Morgan's book is so good, because she goes through how laws were changed and created and why laws are the way they are today, looking back at history.
That's interesting. You know I love precedent.
That is your favourite word. I would highly recommend the book.
Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Hume's argument, his defence argument for Archibald, was that he couldn't be found guilty because he had no control over what he was doing. And the prosecution wasn't the only side that had their pick of compelling witnesses to call to support Archibald. Lots of people lined up to testify on his behalf. His friends, even some family members, which must have been really difficult because Francis had died.
Yeah.
But people still supported him and spoke in his defence.
Crazy.
They all spoke about the change that they had noticed in Archibald, which is why I spent so long kind of laying that out for you so that you can see what they were talking about. They said he wasn't himself and he wasn't the Archibald that they knew and recognised. And they talked about his suffering with the fever and his odd behaviour since coming home, which painted a convincing picture of someone not fully in control of themselves.
It's compelling.
Isn't it?
I think so. If David Hume loses the case, does he get exhumed from the family? Oh.
If you could see Kieran's grin right now, he can barely contain himself. You exhume a body.
I know.
It's not the same as getting disowned. It's being dug up.
And then burned, I don't know.
He's not a vampire. He's a lawyer.
Might as well be.
I know there's similarities, Kieran, but they're not the same.
Yeah, neither of them have souls.
Unfortunately, what I don't agree with is the defence went so far as to blame the servants for Francis's death.
Oh, that's not cool.
Which I don't agree with.
That seems to be the same as what I said before, of like, oh, well, they're just servants. Who cares if they get hurt?
The defence claimed that the servants should have been like on hand and more on the ball, knowing that Archibald's behaviour was the way it was. They knew he was volatile, they knew he was unpredictable, and the defence argued that they should have been there to get the guns from him before he was able to hurt Francis.
Yeah, because servants have that much responsibility and that much respect to be able to do stuff like that without repercussion. I'm like, oh, sweet, I'll just rugby tackle my boss to the ground, just take his gun off him and then go about my day.
I will put my life on the line.
Yeah. Like, I definitely won't get fired for just stealing my boss's possessions that he's... As you're saying, that he's insane and looking for. I'm just going to do that, am I?
But if the version of the murder is true that Francis didn't know that Archibald had a gun, how would they have known? Because Francis, they were quite close together. Like, he shot him at point blank range. So if he didn't know he had a gun, he didn't know until he died, basically.
Yeah.
Until he was shot, sorry.
And where does that end? Like, why didn't Francis take his guns off of him generally? Why was he allowed to be had guns? Like, that's stupid.
But I guess that's the job of the defence, I guess, is to show that someone else is to blame. Or to provide enough doubt that this person is 100% to blame.
Yeah.
Ultimately, the jury, which was made up of 15 men, because that's what women weren't allowed to serve in the jury, which I think is nonsense. All men. And they were sure to include several gentlemen in the jury. So people who were the same social standing as Archibald, since then he would be judged by his peers.
Yeah.
So the people who were good enough to judge him could. Because normal people wouldn't be able to judge him.
They would simply wouldn't understand. Not learned enough.
Anyway, the jury were asked to decide whether or not the murder of Francis could be put down to madness. And that's in quotes. That's in the court documents. It's madness. And the judge referred to madness as a malady, a sickness. So they had to decide whether or not Francis's murder was because of that.
So you might not know, but can you have like a fit of madness then, but you're always insane by their definitions? You might not know.
In this time, you were either insane or you weren't.
Yes. But could you have a period of madness?
Well, that's what they're deciding.
Yeah, okay.
They haven't decided yet. This hasn't been decided in a court before.
Got you.
So we don't know yet. That's what they're being asked to look at. Yep. But the judge, he made an important distinction. He made a distinction between madness as an illness and madness as a result of alcohol.
Okay.
They weren't the same thing. Doing something out of character because you're really drunk was considered, quote, voluntary contracted madness.
That's fair.
Not being ill.
Yeah.
So if the jury felt that Archibald did what he did because he was drunk, he would be found just guilty, since the actions of a drunk person were judged and treated as if they were sober.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure, like, it's something crazy, like 75% of murders, alcohol is involved.
Probably.
On one side.
So there was a distinction made between, you know, drink being involved and him being unwell.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Archibald didn't get his verdict until the 15th of July.
A month later?
2 weeks.
2 weeks later.
2 weeks of trial and deliberation by the jury. As far as trials go, in the modern day, that's pretty short.
I thought it was quite quick, yeah.
Modern day trials go on longer, but I would imagine there's more evidence now that you can go over.
Yeah, I guess so. Well, I think...
because sometimes they can go on for weeks and weeks.
Yeah. Right, Judge, just humour me on this one. Madness, what do you think?
But the jury had their verdict, and they found Archibald guilty of killing Francis. They agreed that he had done it. He was responsible. He had killed his brother.
I feel like you're going to say but.
But they also declared him insane.
Interesting.
So they recognised that even though the argument had been made that he had partial insanity, they declared him insane anyway. So recognising that partial insanity did exist.
Yep. So he was insane and a murderer.
Yes. It's an important outcome because if he had been found only guilty and not insane, he would have been executed.
Okay.
That's what happened to people found guilty of murder and guilty of pretty much anything.
Yeah.
He would have been executed. So being declared insane saved his life.
Okay, so he got a lesser... would that be different degrees of murder now?
Yeah, I'll get into that later.
Okay.
But he wasn't going to receive the death penalty.
Okay.
The jury basically declared that by declaring him insane, they declared there's no way he would have had the mental capacity to plan and carry out a murder with malicious intent.
Yep, okay.
They didn't think that he was capable of that. Mm-hmm. He couldn't be guilty because he couldn't have fully known what he was doing and he couldn't have appreciated the consequences in his state.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think makes sense.
Yeah, that's very, very astute. It's a good thing there were gentlemen there. I bet soon they came to this conclusion.
Thank God. Unfortunately, though, this is 1795. So he's not going to be executed, but he's not going to receive, you know, this conviction and then get the help that he obviously needs.
No.
Because they're not understood well. Mental illness is not understood. It's not treated well. And the fate of people in Archibald's position was not pleasant. Nothing was really done for those who were deemed criminally insane. They were, up until this point, they were kind of left to figure things out for themselves if they were acquitted of a crime.
Oh yeah.
So they were just kind of left, or they were just left in the possession of their family, and their family had to deal with them.
Strange.
And they didn't really know how, so they wouldn't get them the help they needed. In Archibald's case, he was sentenced either to life in the Tolbooth Jail in Edinburgh.
Yep.
To life in jail. Or if someone close to him could put up £10,000, he could be released into their permanent care.
That's a very strange deal.
Now, for other people in this situation, if they were deemed insane... possibly not even by the courts, if they were just deemed insane and had a lot of money, they might be put into a private asylum, which did exist. There was no state care at this time. These were private establishments for profit.
Yes.
They were expensive.
I believe it.
And in some cases, families would send a relative away just so they could get their money and their property.
Yeah.
They abused the system.
Yep.
So this was kind of the situation, and this is what Archibald had to kind of choose, or not even him, he didn't get to choose between. It was someone else who had to make the decision whether he would be life in jail or life under house arrest, basically.
Yeah, that's bizarre. I don't know which one they're going to pick.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen at this point?
Well, if he inherited £13,000, I believe.
It was 1,300, which was...
yes, it was, wasn't
it? The equivalent of over 160,000 pounds today.
So they want £1 million. To get a murder.
Over £1 million. It's a million and a quarter.
to get a murderer into your house who presumably murdered your brother or nephew or cousin. I can't see them going for it. I can't see anyone being able to afford it unless they sell the house, which they don't because you said it's still in the family. I think that he's going to go to jail.
You think?
That's what I think.
Archibald was very lucky. As lucky as he could have been anyway. Like, he's not having an easy time.
Yeah.
Do you remember Dr. William Farquharson?
Yes.
He was the one who helped Archibald when he injured himself years before.
When he hurt his hand?
Yes.
Yes.
Dr. William agreed to take in and care for Archibald in his home.
What?
To ensure he wouldn't hurt himself and he wouldn't hurt anyone else.
That's mental.
Now, there aren't any records that he actually paid the £10,000. I don't know whether that amount was paid. Because it would be, I looked it up, it would be worth £1,280,000, roughly.
That's a lot.
That's a lot of money, even for a doctor.
That's a lot.
So I don't know whether he paid all of it. I don't know if he had to pay part of it and
then there's a deal.
Make payments. I have no idea. But Archibald was released and he was allowed to live with the doctor.
Mental.
He was spared spending the rest of his life in the Tolbooth jail, which would have been awful.
I wonder why. Like, that's a very grand act of charity. That to me seems somewhat misplaced.
I don't know. I don't really know what the reason is. I don't know whether it was something negotiated with his family, because his family, like you said, very mixed feelings.
Yeah.
I would imagine, because he had killed their relative.
Well, maybe it was like a power and influence play. He'd be owed deeply by this quite rich and powerful family.
Well, what I'm saying is, I wonder if the family approached him and said, will you take care of him? We'll give you money.
Yeah.
You take him because you have the medical experience.
That's true.
We either don't want him, we can't look after him.
Yep.
So it was a deal between the two rather than him coming up with the idea.
Yeah. That weirdly seems more likely, because it just seems too randomly charitable
Presumably he didn't have that money.
Yeah, to just be a pure act of kindness to someone you met once.
But then if it was an act of kindness and he made that case to the judge, maybe the judge waived the fee.
Maybe. Which is bizarre.
The doctor had a house on World's End Close in Edinburgh.
Nice.
Which we've actually visited. There's
a pub there.
It's where one of the boundaries of the old Edinburgh city used to be.
Mm.
That's on the Royal Mile. He had a house there.
Oh.
And Archibald moved in with him.
Hmm.
But soon after, his name disappears from post office records in Edinburgh. So it seems like he moved away from Edinburgh completely soon after. And Kate Morgan, in her book, she suggested that it's possible he moved somewhere more rural, mm-hmm. which I would fully believe. It's quiet, it's private, it's more safe.
Yeah.
I think that would be a good idea. And if the family had a part in it, it would make sense that they're like, okay, you sell your home. We will buy this place for you where you can it's good live
little,
with him.
Good little retirement, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Maybe a member of the family spoke to the judge. They're an important family.
Yeah, maybe.
I think the family intervened. Yeah. I think they made plans, but I can also appreciate why they wouldn't welcome him home.
Yeah, absolutely.
Even with your best intentions, that would be so hard.
Yeah, well, because you always love your family, no matter what. But you might not want to see them every day.
And could you get over that pain?
Yeah, and to be their full-time carer would be a lot. So I could see it, making sure he's looked after.
Yeah. Like wanting him to not be in jail.
Yeah.
But not being able to get over what he did. It's impossible to know how you would react, really.
Absolutely.
Because it's an impossible situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, unfortunately, Archibald died 5 years later.
Yeah.
He died in 1800 and he was about 50. And it really seems like he was very, very ill.
Yeah.
I think he was lucky that he was able to live out his last years with someone who seemed to genuinely want to take care of him and make sure he was okay. And yeah, I'm not sure what the reasoning was for the doctor to be involved. My thinking is just the family thought he would be a good person to put Archibald in the care of because he was a doctor.
No one better, really. Yeah.
Archibald kept the title of baronet for the rest of his life.
Well, that seems odd.
Mm-hmm. Being found guilty of murder didn't strip him of the title, which I think is bananas, but it made me think of the fact that Prince Andrew is still the Earl of Inverness.
Yeah.
Despite the truly awful things that he's done.
Well, there's quite a lot about, well, outcry from the people wanting to change his title,
mm-hmm.
but I think either only the Queen can or not even the Queen can.
I don't know.
But the House of Lords can't.
But you would think that some crimes, if you're found to have been involved with or guilty of, would strip you of titles automatically, but that's not how it works.
No.
The criminal law is completely separate from like titles.
Aristocratic.
Yeah, it's banana. So he stayed the Baronet of Gilmerton for his whole life after murdering his brother and getting the title from him.
I mean, when you just say it like that, it does sound correct. So yeah, that's how it works.
But is that,
that's mad.
When you look at it more closely, you would think there would be some kind of like failsafe that, no, if you murder someone, you don't get the benefits.
No.
You know, like if you're found to have murdered someone for their life insurance.
Yep.
You don't get their life insurance.
Yeah, yeah. Yep, you were guilty, but here we go, we're releasing you from jail, here's all your money.
You know, like, sweet. I don't know. I was surprised by that.
Yes.
I shouldn't have been, but I was.
No. Bizarre.
And like I said earlier, Archibald's trial was important for the wider legal world, because this was one of the first times that the concept of diminished responsibility was used in a trial, even though those words didn't actually appear in the trial.
Yeah.
It was one of the first times this defense was used, but the term came later.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, we understand what diminished responsibility means.
Mm-hmm.
If someone claims diminished responsibility, they're saying they can't be held accountable for what they did because their mental functions were diminished or impaired.
Yes.
And we understand what that
is.
Archibald's trial also marked a significant fork in the road for Scottish and English law.
Oh, yeah?
Because the Scottish law with this case had effectively accepted that it was possible for someone to be, quote, partially insane.
Mm-hmm.
English law wouldn't include the defence of diminished responsibility until 150 years after this.
Wow, that's a long time.
Mm-hmm. And for those of you who don't know, Scottish and English law are different.
They are different, yeah.
But yeah, this was a significant change
mm-hmm.
for them. They didn't recognise it in the same way.
Different in nuance more than absolutes.
Yeah, yeah, just... That's the thing. They're similar in some ways, but there are differences between the two when you get into it.
It's different enough that there's a book called The Secret... Was it The Secret Barrister? The Secret Life of a Barrister? Yeah, and it was a big deal about a barrister and like what goes on in the world of law. And I started reading it and I just didn't care because it was about English law. And just everything's, oh, that's different here. Oh, that's different here. I'm like, oh, well,
it was harder to get into.
Yeah, I didn't take with it because Scottish law is different enough from English law.
Well, yeah, that was one of the differences.
Yeah.
And it was different for a long time. Now, in the US, you asked earlier about different degrees of murder.
I did.
In the US, the defence that Archibald used would basically prove that he didn't commit first degree murder.
Mm-hmm.
Since for first degree murder, the prosecution has to prove that the accused person planned the murder in advance and fully planned and intended to kill the victim.
Yep.
That's first degree murder. Archibald might still have been convicted of second degree murder,
mm-hmm.
but not first. And I checked, for second degree murder, Wikipedia says, any intentional murder with malice aforethought, but is not premeditated or planned.
Mm.
So they killed the victim and they meant to do it, but they didn't plan it.
Yeah. That seems fair.
But this is US specific.
Yeah.
Murder charges are different across countries.
Mm.
So I want to be clear that this is in the US. But I'll focus on Scotland and Scottish law.
That's why we're here.
For the moment. Because things have changed since Archibald's trial. In the 1900s, the courts actually limited what counted under diminished responsibility, which made it harder to argue that plea.
Mm.
Because they wouldn't accept as much. And this is what the courts decided verbatim. They said, it is very difficult to put in a phrase, but it has been put in this way, that there must be aberration or weakness of mind, that there must be some form of mental unsoundness,
mm-hmm.
that there must be a state of mind which is bordering on, though not amounting to, insanity, again, legally, that there must be a mind so affected that responsibility is diminished from full responsibility to partial responsibility.
Mm.
In other words, the prisoner in question must be... This is a problem as well. They say the prisoner in question and they haven't been charged yet. That's assuming guilt,
yeah.
in my head. Anyway, in other words, the prisoner in question must be only partially accountable for his actions. And I think one can see, running through the cases, that there is implied that there must be some form of mental disease.
I suppose they can say the prisoner to imply guilt, because this is after you've ascertained that they are guilty. You're just deciding how guilty they are.
Well, no, not if this is their defence.
Ah, yes.
This isn't deciding on a sentence. This is deciding guilt.
Yeah.
So they're not guilty in the eyes of the law. Because they haven't been charged.
I guess so, but then for Archibald, he was very clearly guilty.
Yes, but he has not been found guilty by a court of law.
I guess
you can't assume guilt. That's the whole system.
That's the whole thing.
I know that he shot him. I'm not saying he didn't do that.
Yeah.
But legally, he wasn't found guilty yet.
Hmm. Interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Now, this change, this little bit that I read, made it a lot harder to plead diminished responsibility.
Mm.
I read somewhere that the different factors that I listed were considered cumulative.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that means that you had to satisfy like one or more of them to make your argument. You couldn't have just one.
Yep.
Which was deemed unfair because it's a huge amount to satisfy everything on that list.
Mm-hmm.
And anything that was committed when someone was under the influence of drugs or alcohol didn't meet the conditions automatically. But neither did anything someone did who was suffering from psychopathic personality disorder.
Well, that's weird.
So you couldn't plead diminished responsibility if you suffered from, quote, psychopathic personality disorder.
Hmm.
I'm guessing because there's still the issue of right and wrong. You know what's wrong.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. If it's not clear, I'm not a lawyer.
Yeah, we're getting into the weeds now.
I don't know. As late as 2004, the Scottish courts changed the law again about diminished responsibility. And here's what they said. To serve the purpose of a defence in law, the disorder must therefore amount to an absolute alienation of reason.
Oh.
Such a disease as deprives the patient of the knowledge of the true aspect and position of things about him, hinders him from distinguishing friend from foe, and gives him up to the impulse of his own distempered fantasy.
Hmm.
Which I think makes sense.
Yes, I
you
think so.
You look confused.
Yeah, I can't imagine specifically what that would be.
Well, that's the thing. It has to be kind of vague because if it's too narrow, it won't apply to anyone.
Yeah.
But the key phrase in all of that is the absolute alienation of reason.
Yes.
That's the key. That's the important bit. And deprives the patient of the knowledge of the true aspect and position of things about him. So you can't see what's genuine.
Yeah.
So you might have delusions, paranoia, that stops you from seeing things as they are.
Yeah.
And you can't tell friend from foe, so you don't trust anyone. It makes sense, I think.
Yes, I'm with you.
Now, this has all been a bit of a different story from us, but that is the story of Archibald Kinloch and the creation of the insanity defence.
Well, there you go. I enjoyed that. That was very different.
Very different for us. It's not in our wheelhouse at all.
No.
But I thought it was really interesting. Because I think you kind of take it for granted that these laws exist, but they had to be made sometime.
Had to have come from somewhere. Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that was very interesting.
I'm glad you found it interesting, because I did.
I did. I thought it was really good. I mean, I enjoyed it before he said that. And why this story? I'm like, well, why not this story? I enjoyed that story. What was wrong with the story? Well, we shall return next week.
Yes. Hopefully better prepared.
Yes. More on time and more better still.
Because we're still catching up.
We're still catching up.
But we're still here.
But now we're going to have our wee blether for Patreon.
Yes. So join us over there. It's good fun.
It is.
We have a great time.
We're having a good time.
Thank you so much for listening. We really, really appreciate it.
We do. Bye.
Bye.